Peace and love. Peace and love.
Welcome to this neighborhood, neighbor.
My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
You know what I am? I'm a housewife that figured it out.
Wow, 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 wow!
And now, here's the host of Good Things Radio, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Good Things Radio. My name is Brooke Taylor, a housewife who has not figured it out. This is episode number 116. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. And we have a power-packed program for you today. Not just one fantastic guest, but two experts in the field of self-defense and faith. So we're going to talk about that in two different segments. Did you know that one of the fastest growing industries is security in churches? So some congregations are actually training parishioners as much, even if some cases more, than police departments to be ready to defend the flock. So where does that lead the average mom carrying a baby on one hip, a toddler on another? Where does that leave widows and grandmothers? Is this something best left to the men? Do we all play a role in this? Where does that leave you? And we're at the point, unbelievably, where we do need to think about such things as defending our families in the sanctuary of the church. So we're going to tackle that topic head on with our first guest on today's show, Jacob Paulson. He is the co-host of the Concealed Carry podcast, part of the Concealed Carry Network, a firearms instructor. So he'll be on the show with us. And then later on, morality and self-defense. Did you know the Catechism of the Catholic Church has something specifically to say about this topic? The Bible has something to say, God's word. So to help extrapolate that data, we're going to talk to Jeff Cavins. He's back on the program with us, a Bible scholar, somebody who knows a thing or two about that. So he will discuss the issue of specifically the Second Amendment, but self-defense and faith. So you don't want to miss it. A lot to contemplate this time around on the show. Also, October 19th is the feast day of St. Isaac Jogues, one of those saints that my kids always get wide-eyed when they hear about because they kind of cringe in parts where you enumerate how he was tortured, his martyrdom. But he is a powerful witness from France. He came with the Jesuits to the new land as a missionary to evangelize the Native Americans. One of the bravest, most daring things a person could do, voluntarily enter into hostile tribes on foreign soil. So just to read an excerpt of his story, the Mohawks captured St. Isaac, cruelly beat him with sticks, tore out his fingernails. He had some of his fingers cut off at one point. They made him suffer for 13 months. He was tortured. During that time, he tried to teach the faith to anyone who would listen. When he was set free by the Dutch, he went back to France to get better. But as soon as he could, he returned to North America to continue his work. Father Jogues was finally martyred, put to death by the Mohawks. And these men, these martyrs like St. Isaac, many others like him, were heroes that gave their lives for the witness of Christ, for the people of North America. So it's with that in mind that I want to begin our program and start in prayer, as we always do, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the land we call home. We thank you for the land of the free, the home of the brave. With contrite hearts, Lord, we seek forgiveness for the egregious wrongs, betrayals, mistreatment in the history of our country. We humbly implore that your Spirit will descend and renew our people, heal our land, Lord. Make us courageous in the faith so that we may carry out the work of your hands in all circumstances, in our own life and place. May we be bold and never count the cost. May we lift up our homes, our schools, our missions, for vocations, for the conversion of sinners, the return of those who have wandered from the fold. We pray for the Native Americans. We pray for those in California dealing with the terrible wildfires and the soul of our nation, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Well, whether you are in Los Angeles or Amish country, the issue of the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms, has been a topic of debate. And I think recently, almost an area of discernment, I would say, for some, as we revisit the gun laws, the rights, and these mass shootings. I do want to tie those things together in our country. And for me as a woman, for many women, moms, how does that play out in our lives? For me personally, if you're a longtime listener of the program, you know that it's been about a year since I decided to really seriously dig into this deeply. And it opened my eyes. It changed my life. I would actually go so far as to say that. And the country that I grew up in and the country that I'm now raising my children in are I feel different. And growing up 30 years ago, the threats were there, but probably more covert. Today, I feel they're very much more overt, just in vulnerable people, openly targeted individuals, soft targets. We hear that. Malls, amusement parks, now concerts. And so for me, working as a news anchor, especially in the Cleveland area, seeing the headlines, finding out about violent crimes that occurred every day, that was the tipping point for me. But then, so I would say it's more protection than recreation that I got into it. But then I felt on a moral standpoint that it was important to be able to defend. Is my life not worth protecting the lives of my children? And the answer is yes, of course. So it wasn't just going to the gun range, but learning about Cooper's rules of gun safety, the parts of a gun, calibers, don't say gun clip, it's a magazine, you know, the whole culture that goes with it. But again, all about safety, all about the responsibility. And a huge part of that journey for me was a podcast that I found, and it's called the Concealed Carry Podcast with Riley T. Bowman, Jacob Paulson, fantastic hosts, and covering everything from legislation to basic tips, great guests. So really honored as we tackle this topic today to welcome one of the hosts to the program. Jacob Paulson is joining me. Hi, Jacob.
Hello, Brooke. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being on the show. And I really mean that. I feel like you are my pistol professors and, you know, in a digital way, in a virtual way, have taught me a lot because I am busy. I don't have time, although I would like to go to the range and take classes and do online courses. But you and Riley, I think, are such great experts to speak, even though you know so much, into the lives of everyday, you know, laymen and women that are just out there trying to figure it out. And so I want to share a little bit about your story and experience. How did you enter into this world of firearms?
Yeah, so the most accurate answer is there was a time when I owned a private security business. And in that business, we had to pay third-party companies to come in and train our employees, our security officers. And it became very costly and expensive. So I eventually became certified to do all that training and instruction myself. And when the security business went under in early 2007, I basically said, hey, I'll start a new company where we just focus on the training aspect because I now have those credentials. And that has grown into concealedcarry.com, which is what we have today, a media company, a company that provides tools and resources. And we have about 50 instructors in about 24 states that provide in-person training.
And you're one of them. You are an instructor. I failed to mention that, mm-hmm. but you've done that for at least 10 years.
Yep. About a decade now teaching. I've had, 5,000 to 6,000 students through those classes. And yeah, this is something everyone in our company practices, what we preach, so to speak.
Well, and you've seen a lot. So I want to talk a little bit about women because females are the fastest demographic of gun owners. And this is according to numerous polls, CNN, Pew. And I just pulled up one stat that said nearly 1 in 4 women in the United States carries a gun, which is an increase of 77% in the last 5 years, which is huge. Why do you think that is? And does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me. I think that we have to remember that while it's the fastest growing demographic, it still technically represents a smaller percentage, a smaller piece of the total industry. So good to see the fast growth, but women still are a smaller demographic in the gun buying world. But that's going to change if this growth keeps up, right? Which is what we want to see. And I think this is why it doesn't surprise me. What we're seeing over the last 5 to 10 years is guns are changing in the mind of the American citizen from a tool for hunting or a tool for recreation to being a tool for personal protection. So while any given consumer, female or otherwise, might have said, I don't have an interest in hunting or I don't have an interest in recreational shooting, we're all coming to this realization that we have to take our own protection into our own hands. That the police, as awesome as they may be, they're generally 20 minutes out. So we have to be proactive. And I think that women are taking responsibility just like a lot of people are. And you see that among men too, frankly. You have the hunters who are now saying, hey, maybe I should have guns also for personal protection. So I think it's just a general movement toward personal protection, and women are part of that.
Well, and I want to park there too, because not just men and women, but also, like you said, where you happen to live. Is the culture different in the inner city? I have girlfriends of color who say they don't let their kids, their boys, play with guns because it is different. They're afraid, and they themselves have a much different, it's violent crime that they have an understanding of firearms. So they don't want to have anything to do with it. Yet, when I was at my CCW class, I was surprised at the number of women of color there. It was dominant, I would say, and just my little anecdotal survey that I did just counting. But does that surprise you? I had seen that more Black women are getting their CCW permit. They are carrying. And why do you think that is? Is it to defend themselves?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, mostly because I'm on the front lines. Maybe it would surprise a consumer, but I'm in the business, so to speak. So we've seen that for a while. And it's true that in the inner city, and this is not just an issue of population in the U.S., but also ethnicity. So you have, for example, Latinos, which now represent a massive population shift here. 50 million of the 350 million, you know, American citizens are Latino in origin. So some ethnicities of people or some cultures in terms of where you live, it has created a stigma where guns are associated with criminal behavior, right? Only criminals have guns. Criminals and cops have guns. And so any association with a gun is negative. And that's why those people, whether it's because of their culture in terms of where their family is from or just because of where they live and where they've been raised, that creates an entirely different culture around guns that has a negative stigma. So yeah, it's taken longer for those people to, I think, come around, so to speak, to this idea that, you know what, guns are a necessary tool if I want to protect me and my family.
Well, and you talk about the demographics changing and shifting and also the stigmas. And you mentioned that a little bit about violent crime. But you've got, on one hand, the gun grabbers will call them. On the other hand, the rednecks will call them. And I'm just using stereotypes that are commonly thrown out there. But really, this does transcend any blue or red, or in terms of political party, or I would even say faith affiliation, which is the program, my podcast is all about faith. And so that is a component that I think has played in, at least for me, living an authentic Christian witness. And can you be, is it mutually exclusive to be a Christian and to carry a firearm? Now, I want to ask you, someone asked me this question. I know how I answered, but I want to know how you would answer. They said, how could you be pro-life and support the Second Amendment, own a firearm, support those who sell the ammo? I know what I said, but I would love to know how you would answer that.
Yeah, the answer is that guns save lives. So being pro-gun is being pro-life, is in my perspective, and you know that's an argument that we can have, but that is certainly the perspective of the gun owner who has a gun for self-defense. It's about being pro-life. You know, on our podcast every Monday, we report on about a half dozen news stories from the previous 7 days of people using a gun in their own self-defense. So I would ask, you know, anyone who asked me that question, say, well, then what is it in this case? You know, where this gun saved lives, whether a round was fired or not, whether a criminal had to die or not, the gun was a tool used to save life. So doesn't that make it a pro-life tool if used properly by responsible people?
Well, it's interesting. I actually went, I happen to be Catholic, so I went to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and it was actually laid out in there. It's legitimate self-defense. Obviously, it's a different story. Every scenario has to be individually analyzed and discerned. But the idea, like you said, that if I have children, and we are in a country now, if we could wipe out every gun in the face of the earth, well, that might be an option, but we can't. And so to, as citizens, be able to protect our families, I think it is important. And I think it's one thing to have it, but to actually use it. I want to ask you about the fear issue, because I've talked to a lot of moms and ladies who have said, I could train, I could go to the range, I could learn, but I could never pull the trigger and eliminate a threat. So how does fear play in?
Well, frankly, I think they're wrong. I think that that's not true. You know, I've taught a lot of classes. In fact, not last year, I taught a class to a group of pastors, kind of a non-denominational group of pastors, different Christian faiths. And there are a few of them who raised their hand and said something to the effect of, you know what, I'm good with dying. Like, I'm totally okay, you know, meeting my maker tomorrow. And I think that's a very amazing kind of amount of self-introspection. But they also said, what I'm not okay with is the blood of my flock being on my hands. So I'm willing to step in and do what's necessary to defend these people who look to me to protect them. And I got no problem going to my maker, that's fine. But it is also my job to protect my flock. And I think when I hear people say, hey, I could never pull a trigger, I could never shoot someone, I think, yeah, you could. No, you're wrong. It's just not true. If the circumstances were right, you could. The instinct, the innate human instinct of survival is extraordinarily powerful. And, you know, thinking about moms specifically, like, I have a hard time believing that you could sit there and watch someone rape your child or kidnap them and you would not have the ability to pull a trigger.
Right.
I think that's a lie. I don't think that's true. And so I think that this comes down to really understanding what the tool is for. And if we understand what the tool is for, then maybe it helps us kind of overcome this idea that I could not use that tool in those circumstances, because you could.
You mentioned pastors, and so I wanted to ask about churches, because that is the triangle of my life. It's home, school, and church, and whether I'm speaking, I go into churches, and that's where, because whether you're in scouts or groups, where we just happen to be a lot. And I know you find a church, and you'll find a different philosophy about this. You do have churches that have the big no gun signs. You have others where there probably are armed parishioners. What are you seeing in terms of your connection with the church and how pastors are feeling overall about this?
Yeah, you know, church, this is a new thing. There's an entire industry exploding right now in this country surrounding church security. So churches are getting on board with this idea that they need people to protect them. You know, last year, I had my research team go out and build me a spreadsheet with a list of news stories over the previous 10 years of violent crimes taking places in churches or on church property across this country. And that spreadsheet is very long. It is extensive. The number of violent crimes that take place in churches or on church property would surprise you. It is scary. And so churches are getting on board with this idea, whether it's the priest, the bishop, the pastor, the reverend, whoever it is. People are coming to understand that when someone comes into your building, they want to feel a sense of security and safety. And frankly, they deserve it. And when we're seeing, you know, the right to worship under attack, not only by the government, but also by shooters, by deranged lunatics, that means we have to do something to protect ourselves. And so there's an entire industry out there, you know, that's growing just around the idea of training churches to help them build security protocols, security plans, and security teams. And sometimes, you know, in a lot of churches, that's real simple. It's a pastor who's going to get two or three volunteers and say, hey, you know, will you guys go and get your concealed carry permits and, you know, sit in the back row on Sundays. And that might be as far as it goes. For others, it's much more ornate. I've done training with churches where, and you'd be impressed. It is pretty, you know, they have security teams that are better prepared and better trained than most police departments.
It's interesting because in my own church, there's a firefighter and there's another man who does security all over the world. And between those three, my husband and these two other men, they do create a triangle in the church and they have the exits covered. There's a balcony. So we always know that there are those sheepdogs among us and they might be dressed in suits and ties, but they are in some ways our guardians. But I think the average mom just trying to figure out how she's going to wrangle her kids and get them in the door, should she be thinking about that? Should this be left to the men, or is it all of us as individual citizens being vigilant?
Well, I think there's a couple of things here to understand. The first one is that while the kind of the mass shootings of this nation are the things that get all the media attention and often kind of build all the emotion that leads us to action, they're not the most common thing among which we have to defend ourselves from. So we have to stop connecting the idea of being a gun owner and carrying it around with the premise that I'm going to be in a movie theater and someone's going to come in and shoot 30 people, because the odds of that are extremely low. The more truth, you know, the real reality is probably going to be that I'm going to be in my home and someone's going to break in and you know, they're going to have malintentions. So I'm going to have to do something about it. That's reality. That's true. And so while, yeah, we can all sit here and say, hey, it is possible that I'd be sitting in church in Tennessee 3 weeks ago and someone comes in and starts shooting people. That happened. And so, yeah, someone needs to be able to do something, but that's not the normal day-to-day reason why most people carry a gun. It's for the more common situations, you know, where the mom was in Walmart 2 weeks ago and her daughter gets into a fist fight with someone and it starts to get bloody. And so she decides, you know what, this is going bad. I might have to defend my own daughter in a Walmart. Those are, you know, probably more likely than me being in Las Vegas when someone opens fire and kills, you know, shoots 500 people. So that's the first thing to consider. The second is that we unfortunately have this stigma with guns and concealed carry that's connected to heroism. And I can tell you right now, I'm not a hero. And I have no qualms about saying that. Like, if I'm in a gas station and someone's going to shoot the guy at the front counter, I will hide behind the the noodles in the back row. Like, I have no problem going home and continuing to be a father and letting that man die. It's just not an issue for me because my kids deserve a dad. And so I would encourage you, if you're thinking about this, that you have to remember your job is not to go out and save society from bad guys and bad gals. Your job is to protect you and your family. That's your number one. And so you need to say, well, what if that's all I have to do? That's not that intimidating. And having a gun with me all the time then is a necessity if that's my objective, because I can't trust anybody else to protect me and these people next to me. That's my job. And that's what I'm going to do.
One of the things I do think bears mentioning is when I started to carry my firearm, I drastically changed my smartphone habits because I did recognize that I was always looking at my phone. And when I had my firearm, I felt like I need to be alert and know what's going on around me, that situational awareness. And it was interesting to me because I could see, as I reflected back, how often I just wasn't aware of the issue. Yeah, I mean, the person next to me pumping gas, for instance. And so How much does that play in? Do you see that a lot where people are just kind of checked out?
Yes. I don't know how significant an issue it is. I think that there's a lot of other and unrelated benefits to just paying attention to your world beyond just, you know, seeing the threat coming.
Right.
So I would say, hey, if the gun is the thing that allows us to have increased situational awareness, awesome. And while that's very important for the purpose of self-defense, there's a myriad of other great benefits that come from just opening your eyes and seeing the world that's around us and the beauty that God has created, right? So I would go so far as to say that, yes, that's important and that's an awesome byproduct, but it's probably not the greatest benefit that comes from just setting down the device and opening your eyes.
Well, and your show and the Justified segment that you have has opened my eyes. I think the scenarios that play out that unfortunately are real, they have happened, but they teach great lessons, has really helped me see that it's not going to be A, B, and you're going to get C. And all these threats do come in different ways. Hopefully, God willing, we'll never have to deal with it. But you talked about hiding behind the noodles. Is it instinct? When do we know, okay, I just need to call 911 here, or I need to actually deploy my weapon and eliminate this threat? Is it when that person's coming for you directly, or is it different in every scenario?
I think that to believe we can really pre-plan it is a little bit naive and foolish. I think that we need some guiding ethical principles, and if those principles live deep enough and we know what they are, then that will be how we'll react whether we like it or not. So the better question is to say, you know, what am I really willing to risk my life for? What am I willing to kill for? And the answers to those questions, which are somewhat individual and personal, they live pretty deep inside of you. And so if you really have a strong grasp on those answers and you're comfortable with the answers to those questions, then know that you'll act on that regardless. That will be the most natural instinctive thing that you're going to do. You know, it takes a lot of work to train our law enforcement officers and our military to run toward gunfire. It's not natural. So, you know, just know that instinctively, you're probably going to do the best thing regardless. A little bit of training goes a long way. But the key, what we're really training people for, is so that when they engage, they do it to maximize a positive outcome. But when and how you're going to engage is pretty instinctive and not something that needs or requires a great deal of direction.
Where would you recommend a woman start if maybe she doesn't have a gun? I know there, that was, to me, overwhelming in the beginning. It's like, okay, there are a million. Is it Glock? Is it SIG? Is it Smith & Wesson? I don't even know. And then I actually went to the local gun store and felt like the guy was laughing at me, and maybe he was. But then I just felt like I don't even want to enter into this because it's way over my head. And so for me, it was actually going to YouTube and doing things in my own home where I learned, okay, this is the barrel, this is the slide, and the very basics. And then going out. But for somebody who really doesn't have any experience, like myself, I mean, my husband did and does, but where would you suggest starting?
Mm-hmm. I'm a graduate of the University of YouTube, so I would highly encourage people to get enrolled today. It's free. So here's some thoughts. One, you know, women don't want to be treated different than men until you want to be treated different than men. And men have no idea when that is. So don't ever go out and say, what's the best gun for women? You know, because it has nothing to do with being a woman. It has to do with maybe size of hands. And maybe traditionally women have smaller hands or something, but that's really irrelevant. Here would be a couple thoughts that are actually tangibly really helpful. Number one would be, don't go to gun store. Go to friends who have guns. You know how often me and my wife go shooting together? Every time someone asks us to go with them. Anytime me and my wife are at the range together, it's a double date. And that happens pretty darn regularly because inevitably either one of my friends is going to come to me and say, hey, let's go shooting together. And I'm like, I'm a busy dude. If you want that to happen, you're going to have to convince your wife to convince my wife and all four of us will go. Or it's the opposite. It's one of my wife's friends coming to her and saying, hey, I'd like to learn to shoot or, you know, do this shooting thing. Like, what do we do? And my wife's like, yeah, double date, grab your husband, we'll roll. And that's an extremely effective methodology. And even if you didn't go with that other couple, the point is go get somebody who's familiar with guns and owns a ton of them and just go to the range with them and shoot with them. Their opinions on those guns are far more validated than the gun salesman because that person owns the guns and knows everything about them, has shot them. And there's nothing better than just getting a bunch of guns in your hand and shooting them all. And you can't do that at most gun stores. Even if you could, it's going to be very expensive. You're going to have to pay rental fees. You have to buy the ammo from them. It's going to be crazy. And you're not going to get good input because this person is a gun salesman and has an incentive to get rid of guns. So finding the friend, that one person in your circle who owns a ton of guns and asking them to take you to the range and bring all of them and let you try them all is your number one. Here's the second piece of legit, like really good, actual solid advice. Just buy something. We put way too much effort and emphasis into picking the right gun. And this is one of those situations in life when making a decision is more important than making the best decision. Because for one, guns have extremely high resale value. So if you buy the wrong gun, which you're so afraid to do, don't stress it. You'll turn around, you'll sell it tomorrow, and you'll probably turn a profit. So it's not a big deal. It's like real estate, classic cars, and old stamps. Take good care of it, and it'll make you money. So don't worry so much about finding the perfect gun. Just buy one. And if you hate it, sell it, get another one. It's not going to be a problem. One more important is that you just have one so you can start to shoot it and develop a sense for what you like and don't like about it.
And I think those are fantastic tips. For myself, I had a Derringer, which is just because I thought it would be something I could manage not having any gun experience. And my husband was like, are you sure? Because for those that don't know, this would be the gun that like the saloon ladies would wear back in the day. But that's where I had to start for me. And my husband sure. saying, you're not probably going to do any damage unless someone is like right there. But it was a process for me. So
yeah, and just start somewhere is the point. Like don't drag out the decision because you're afraid of screwing up. Just shoot something. Like, go get a gun and shoot it.
Well,
and you'll quickly learn you hate it or love it.
And I think, too, to be true to who you are, I have to say that when I kind of entered into the gun culture, it frustrated me a little bit because there's, I guess, like anything that is in some ways testosterone-driven. Like on Instagram, for instance, there was a lot of women half dressed and they're holding these big guns. And I thought, I don't want to be a part of that. I'm just, you know, I'm someone that I want to be responsible. I want to be classy. I want to do what I need to do. And so I think like anything, you can glorify things and be extreme about it. And people can give guns a bad name. But that's what I love about your program is you really do a good job of the education. So if people don't know, how can they catch your show?
Yeah, so the easiest way to find our show in any podcast catcher app thingy, iTunes, whatever, just search Concealed Carry Podcast. It'll be the number one result. And I think we're on episode 164 or so right now. So I'd encourage you to subscribe and then go back and just review past titles, look for things that pop out to you that sound interesting and listen to those. And, you know, a lot of these podcast apps now will let you like increase playback speed. So you can go through an hour worth of content in 30 minutes and get the nuts and bolts very quickly. So that's the easiest way to find us. But our website is also concealedcarry.com. Very easy to remember.
And you do a great job of your show notes. And I love, again, you cover legislation, you cover cold weather carry tips, you have great guests on your program. The one I really liked too was when you did your EDC bag. And that's, which I forgot I wanted to ask you too. So maybe that'll be our last takeaway question for self-defense for women. What should the average mom be carrying on her person on a daily basis? Maybe she's saying, I've listened to this entire interview. I'm not ready for a firearm. I don't remember if it was you or Riley that said a tourniquet. Every day they carry a tourniquet. Any just basic top three, top five things?
Yeah, it's a bit of a hard question. The answer is you should be carrying as much as you can comfortably carry every day to be as effective as possible. But you have to start somewhere. I had a friend who did what they called the 30-day knife challenge, and they weren't ready for a gun. So they just got a really decent pocket knife and they carried it for 30 days. And to them, that really helped them then transition to start carrying around a gun. Now, to another person, that might sound like it doesn't work. But maybe it's mace. Maybe it's pepper spray. Maybe it's whatever it might be. But the point is start with something and then work your way up. And even with a gun, we deal with that all the time. We got some people who are carrying the Derringer or the five-shot whatever, and we're constantly trying to help people try and get something that's bigger or holds more ammunition or whatever it might be, you can always do better, and I can do better too. But we have to get to the point where we're comfortable, because the number one most important takeaway from this question is something is better than nothing. The worst thing you can do is say it's too uncomfortable, it's too inconvenient, or I don't feel comfortable with that yet, you know, for whatever other reason, so I'm going to leave it home. That's your number one do not do. So something is always better than nothing, whether some gun is better than, you know, the better gun, or, you know, pepper spray is better than nothing, or mace is better, you know, something is better than nothing. So you have to have something with you. I mean, think about it. If you're listening to this and you're a mom, like, you have Band-Aids, you know, in your purse. You have all sorts of ridiculous things that you rarely need because you're a mom. Like, awesome. Like, how hard is it to add pepper spray to that, or mace, right, or a decent knife? And then as you get more and more comfortable, work your way up. And comfort will come, by the way, only with training, experience, and practice. Nothing else will bring that.
So you do say to start with that, and then any two top more that you would add?
I think a knife is paramount.
Okay.
I think knives are just so multi-use purpose awesomeness. You should always have a knife. I think cash is another one that I think we neglect in a world of plastic. You know, having some cash hidden away somewhere that's not in a wallet that you can access on the fly is huge, 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 huge. And the third I would say is sound. So sound is usually a whistle. Whistles can be very effective. I mean, you need to be able to draw attention quickly when necessary. Here's an interesting idea. I actually in the process of reviewing this product from this company called Yellow Jacket, and they make a case for a cell phone that looks like you've kind of attached an external battery, but it's actually a taser. So you push a button on that sucker, you hit someone with your phone, and boom, they'll drop to the ground.
Jacob, so but look, I mean, this cool. is the stuff that scares me, though, because as a mom, my kids are grabbing my phone, and I'm afraid they're going to tase somebody.
Yeah,
so I guess you just case by case.
Own, right? It may not be a good product for someone who has young children, but it does. I mean, there are some safety, you know, things built into that. You have to push this, then push that, then touch this. So it's not the kind of thing that could go off on accident most of the time. But it's like anything else in life. If you're a mom, you just get this. You got to childproof things.
Right.
You know, you childproof the outlets in the wall. You got to childproof the guns. You got to childproof the mace and the pepper spray. Everything needs to be childproofed. And so there's always a way to do things that is good, safe, and correct. It sometimes just requires changing habits or creating different muscle memory, which is challenging but important for all those things.
And what about flashlight? Would you add that to the list?
Yeah, flashlights are huge. You know, an easy one, this is a flashlight that I'm pretty obsessed with, is the Streamlight MicroStream. It's like $15-$20 on Amazon, and it's tiny. It runs on a single AAA battery. It's 60 lumens, and it just works. Flashlights are amazing. You can take them anywhere. You can even have them on airplanes. They're amazing striker tools. You hit someone with a flashlight, it's going to be very effective. And sometimes you're in the dark, and you need light, too. So flashlights are amazing tools. Have a flashlight.
That's great. All really fantastic information. Thank you for your time. I'm excited, too, because in addition to your fantastic show, you're launching one for women, I understand.
Yeah, correct. It'll be later this year. And the two hosts are not me and Riley. They're actually like women. And they're very modern, you know, women who understand guns, not from kind of the old school redneck, you know, point of view, but from kind of the modern woman, like, hey, I'm still a woman who does woman things, dresses in a woman way, but I choose to be armed and to be prepared. And that'll be launching later this quarter, you know, before the end of the year. And it'll be called Not Your Average Gun Girls Podcast.
Great. All right. We'll follow up on that. And when you talk about practicing and using, another plug I wanted to offer was for the concealedcarry.com store, because from the holsters that you make to the purse, the handbags, I think you do offer everything for every stage of self-defense. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of my favorite quotes is Saint Joan of Arc. She says, "Go forward bravely, fear nothing, trust God, all will be well." And I mention her frequently when I talk about this topic because she is, to me, one of the most formidable saints in history when it comes to defending the dignity of a nation, the people within, persons within that country, exhibiting courage beyond all imagining. We talked at the top of the show, too, about Saint Isaac Jogues. But what does that look like in the year 2017 in the United States? So here to help me answer that from a moral and biblical perspective is our next guest on the program today. Take a listen. Well, the motto of our country, E Pluribus Unum, is many uniting into one. That's the translation, unity. And of course, we know Jesus said that all may be one. That's the hope for our country. That's the hope for us as believers. And I think that we do see pockets of that. We see moments of unity, which is so inspiring and so healing in our country. But more and more, the stories that we see, the evidence that we're collecting is we know we are the church militant. The struggles we have as soldiers of Christ in this present age of sin and darkness. And so we talked about it a little earlier on the show as it's played out in the news or whether it's global or homegrown. But we also want to look at it from a biblical perspective, not to be an alarmist, but to be alert and to be trusting and have peace, but also to be prepared. So to help with that from a biblical perspective is my friend back on the program today, Jeff Cavins. Welcome to the show, Jeff. I know we've talked about this off the air, on the air, personally as believers. You're someone that has a lot of different varied hobbies and interests, but one of them is self-defense. And I know you look at this not from just a cerebral aspect, but from a spiritual aspect. So the violence in our country, what do you make of it?
Well, I think it's alarming what's going on right now, but I also think it's a wake-up call. We heard about the tragedy that took place in France and with a priest, you know, saying mass, celebrating mass. Right now, there's a lot of people that are very, very worried because most of the time when we see an attack, like in Las Vegas, 22,000 people there, the last thing literally that they would have imagined is that from the hotel, Mandalay Bay there, that there would be, 30 ARs pointed at them and shooting at them. It really became a soft target. In the church, there are a lot of people who are asking the question now, well, what about us? I mean, if we're going to Mass and somebody wants to come into our church with an automatic weapon or a semi-automatic weapon, what are we supposed to do? Is there virtue in just laying down your life and saying, yeah, do whatever you want to me, my children, and my grandchildren? No, there's not. But there is some confusion as to how to prepare for it. I spoke to a deacon not too long ago, and he was asking me, he said, you know, we were talking to our deanery about what do we do if somebody comes in and starts shooting in our church? Do we have a plan not only to deal with the perpetrator, but also to escape routes? If somebody is hurt in a real lethal way, what do we do as far as first aid? Is anybody trained to deal with gunshots or knife wounds or any bombs going off, shrapnel, all of that? And he found out that no, there was not even any discussion. And he went to the diocesan level and he looked, nothing. And then he went to Rome and looked, is there anybody discussing this? Is there any plans? No, he didn't find anything. Now, some things may have begun as far as discussion that I'm not aware of, but I think that the average deacon or priest out there right now is wondering, well, what do we do? And does this conflict with insurance? Does it conflict with church teaching? Is it biblically sound? Can we protect ourselves and our loved ones? So I think this is a huge issue right now, and I think it's going to become even a bigger issue in the future.
Yeah, and it definitely seems that way in what Jacob Paulson indicated, our guest talking about this particular area being such a tremendously, high on the radar of pastors and clergy, but yet there hasn't really been a precedent. Now, in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, there is something laid out, and I was able to pull it up. I thought it was so interesting, but not surprising. It talks about legitimate defense. So Catechism number 2265 says legitimate defense can be not only a right, but a grave duty for one who is responsible for the lives of others. The defense of the common good requires that an unjust aggressor be rendered unable to cause harm. For this reason, those who legitimately hold authority also have the right to use arms to repel aggressors against the civil community entrusted to their responsibility. So we take that from a macro level. We think of the military, the law enforcement, but also a micro level. I am responsible for my children. I have a special needs daughter where the awareness of threat might not be as understood in someone else, whether it's now or later on in her life. And so I have to be the one to defend her. So it really does make the case, I think, that it's the moral thing to do. And again, we're not talking about a lethal action necessarily, just defense in general. Is that your perspective as well? Because gun control, gun rights, this is something so hotly debated through all Christian traditions.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that's a great citation there, paragraph 2265, where it talks about how love towards self remains a fundamental principle of morality. Therefore, it is legitimate to insist on a respect for one's own right to life. And that sounds, it sounds kind of funny when you first read it. Love towards oneself remains a fundamental principle of morality. But when we talk about love for oneself, we're not talking about just me standing on my own and that I have this right to life, which I do, both biblically and in church teaching and in our Constitution. But I also have a responsibility as a husband. I have a responsibility as a father, and in my situation, I have the responsibility as a grandfather. And when I'm looking at protecting my life and my family's life, it's much more than me. There's really quite a big responsibility. And so when you look at paragraph 2264, it really does deal with lethal force. And this is something that I think we have to discuss, and we have to come to a clearer understanding of what is our role as protectors, as what I like to call watchmen. As a man, I'm a protector, I'm a provider, and I'm an example, you know, to my family. Paragraph 2264 says that someone who defends his life is not guilty of murder, even if he is forced to deal his aggressor a lethal blow.
So you can't use the Fifth Commandment argument there. You can't say, well, thou shalt not kill. You can't, no matter what, absolute pacifism. So that, you're making the case. We can defend.
You're right. You can defend. And when you get into the biblical text, it actually does not say you shall. Murder is different than killing. And if you happen to take somebody's life in the process of defending your life or defending your wife or your children, your grandchildren, it's self-defense. It's not murder. We're not murder. Murder is a premeditated or an aggressive act on somebody else in taking their life when you did not have to take their life. And so the catechism goes on and says, if a man in self-defense uses more than necessary violence, it will be unlawful. Whereas if he repels force with moderation, his defense will be lawful. Nor is it necessary for salvation that a man omit the act of moderate self-defense to avoid killing the other man, since one is bound to take more care of one's own life than another's. Now, what's interesting about this is that for people who are defending their life, whether it be in a church setting or it's a mall or some other place, naturally speaking, as far as civil law out there, and I would say church teaching as well, is that we do not set out to kill someone. If somebody is attacking my family and there's a disparity of force, in other words, they have a gun, they have a knife, they have a bazooka, they come with a Sherman tank, whatever, you know, whatever it is to come after my family, I'm going to meet them in like manner, and my goal will be to stop the threat. My goal is not to kill anybody. My goal is not to take a life, but my goal is to defend my family and to stop the threat. And if need be, you know, you've got to go to that point where you're meeting them with like force. And if the person were to die, that would be self-defense and not murder.
You know, I'm thinking about my own church, and I found it really interesting in talking to Jacob Paulson. He said there was an entire database that they assembled of violent crimes in churches. And just because it doesn't make the front page headline news, it doesn't mean every day across the country there aren't things happening. It doesn't have to be a mass shooting. It could be something on a smaller scale. And how when I go in, from as early as I can remember, it's such, to me, a place where I shift gears. I know we're to develop a culture of vigilance, but my heart is in front of the cross at the altar. I'm not thinking that way. But yet now I've noticed in one of the churches that I visit periodically, there is a sign on the door that prohibits handguns. And so it did make me stop and think, because as listeners know, I am a CCW permit holder. And so I think, well, should I should I not? But then I know the bad guys are going to be caring. And depending on what state you live in, that state might trump or, you know, those rights of the business. So it just depends. But for parishioners, we want to be watchful. We want to be alert. That's biblical. Do we say something to the pastor and say, look, do you consider having armed parishioners? Is that not our role? Where does this come from? Is it from the top down? Is it an right. individual church's decision?
Well, yeah, and you're expressing very well the confusion out there right now. Because if you talk to various priests or deacons, they're not quite sure what is the policy. And I think that this is something that is going to have to be developed by a diocesan to diocesan level. I know that in my diocese, there are people that are prepared, and there are people that literally they put signs right on the door and say no guns allowed in here. I think that there's a necessary discussion that needs to take place as to how does a church respond to an active shooter or a bomb or stabbings, something like that. How do we? And I think that as shepherds of God's people, the bishops, the cardinals, the priests, they really have an obligation to teach us, you know, what do we do if suddenly someone comes in and they're going to threaten our children or our grandchildren? And so I think it needs to take place on a diocesan level for a number of reasons. One is that there are insurance issues, and there are insurance companies that are going to say, well, if you have a lethal plan, a plan that can that involves lethal force to stop a threat, then here's what we're going to do. You know, as an insurance company, we're not going to cover you or whatever it might be. If there's any connection between the pastor or the bishop and the people, the men or the women in the parish that are prepared for some kind of attack, there needs to be some language there, and there isn't right now. So I think, Brooke, we're right on the beginning stages of what do we do, you know, if something happens. I know that there's a lot of people that are both priests, deacons, and lay people that are taking things into their own hands right now. And of course, the very last thing that we would ever do is use some kind of force, you know, that would be lethal force. But people are talking about it now. It's an issue that has to be discussed.
As we wrap up, I know for myself and for others listening, this topic even being brought to the light is stress-inducing. Even thinking about it is like, oh my goodness, it raises blood pressure, and what country am I living in? And people can be so filled with anxiety. And the reality is, God willing, by the grace of God, we wake up every day, and should anything happen to us, the chances are so small anyway. But again, to be alert wherever we are. Can you offer some final takeaways of hope and the message of peace that we need, I guess, to all be reminded of?
Sure. Well, I think number one, we need to proceed with thinking the best about people and not looking for a boogeyman and to be afraid every time you turn a corner. God does not want us to be walking in fear. He wants us to walk in love, and I think we can do that. At the same time, we need to be prudent. We need to be wise in how we walk in this world. We need to be as gentle as a dove. We need to be as clever as a fox and walk. Now, you used 2265 at the beginning of the interview here, and John Paul II actually uses that too in Evangelium Vitae when he says, unfortunately, it happens that the need to render the aggressor incapable of causing harm sometimes involves taking his life. In this case, the fatal outcome is attributable to the aggressor, whose action brought it about, even though he may not be morally responsible. This is a very important topic. St. John Paul II was discussing it, and we need to continue it, but we need to walk in love, and we need to be responsible, and it's always, always the very last resort.
And we know that the greatest weapon is prayer. And St. Michael, defend our nation, Our Lady, John Paul II, Joan of Arc, great warrior intercessors in a spiritual way. So I think those are wonderful, beautiful, powerful words of truth. Jeff, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, thank you again so much to our special guests on the program, Jacob Paulson from the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the Concealed Carry Network, my friend, Bible scholar, author, teacher, pilgrimage leader, Jeff Cavins. You can find Jeff, by the way, his new podcast at Ascension Presents, also jeffcavins.com. So That's a lot to process. What do you think of today's show, this topic? I think both Jeff and Jacob offered a lot. At the end of our interview off the air, Jacob offered, he said, look, I'll come back on the show if your listeners have more questions. This is such a topic, like a lot of things we cover, that just allows us to scratch the surface. So if you have any questions, let us know. You can reach out on our Facebook page, start the conversation there. It's Good Things Radio on Facebook. Also, email feedback@goodthingsradio.com. You know I'm on Voxer. It's Brooke Taylor and the number one. It's a free app you can download. Leave an audio message. We'd love to hear your voice as well. Next week on the show, I'm so excited about episode number 117. I'm excited to welcome EWTN radio host, author, powerhouse speaker, evangelist, Jesse Romero. If you don't know his story, gosh, where to start? One of the things is he is a three-time World Police Olympics boxing champion, former USA middleweight kickboxing champion, retired veteran of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. I had to read all that, but I do know that. I memorized that because I'm a big fan of his show, listened for years. And if you're familiar, you know the passion with which he comes at the culture, with which he lives his faith, and specifically speaks into the lives of men. And he has a new book. It's called Lord, Prepare My Hands for Battle. I would say, guys, this is especially one for you. Ladies, you're going to love this. But for any guy in your life, tell them about Jesse. This show coming up, you're not going to want to miss this episode again. It's going to be the next show, number 117. A big thank you also to our Podbean patrons, all 19 supporters monthly of the show. It means more than I can tell you, and the way the system is set up is easy. So if you like what you hear, you can offer, it's just kind of a tip jar salute. And it's actually those little tips what allows our program to continue every month and to reach more people and to do the work of reaching souls in the new evangelization. I don't collect a paycheck when I do this show, but your support is the gas in the tank. That is what keeps us going. So no amount is too small, no amount is too large. To become a patron, all you need to do is click the link. It says become a GTR good friend in the show notes. Also, please consider sharing the show with a friend. If you like what you hear, you think that it would bless others as well. And we thank you so much for that. A big thank you to my producer, Mark Cumming from Cumming Home Studio, for his dynamic skills and quick work. He is a producer extraordinaire. So for any audio needs you might have, check him out at cumminghomestudio.com. We surrender our lives to the Prince of Peace. May the peace of God surround you today. Until next time, friends, God bless you.